Okay. What I passed out is a retrospective schedule looking back at the slight differences between what my predicted schedule of topics was, what my actual schedule of topics was. So this incorporates all those updates. None of the due dates or test dates change, nor will they change. This may help you a little bit when you're studying for the last test and for the final exam. A little easier to match up what you see in the board photos with this schedule. I also updated, if you go to the website and you look at the syllabus, I updated the schedule in there too. You can get it electronically. Now, as you can see, what we're going to talk about today are complex eigenvalues and complex eigenvectors. What these do for us is they resolve one of the obstacles to diagonalization. Transformation T from one vector space to the same vector space. It's like a transformation of a three-dimensional space back into three-dimensional space, say. Is diagonalizable if there is a basis for your vector space such that let's just put it and the such that is that we need the following constants. And so you have some real numbers as we usually think about it, but today we'll move on to allowing them to be complex numbers. So you have some vectors that make a basis, and you have some scalars such that the transformation is just multiplies each basis vector by that scalar. So in this basis, the matrix is very nice. Maybe I shouldn't use I if I'm about to launch into complex numbers. I'll use J. In terms of matrices, we're saying that the matrix of the transformation using this basis for both input and output is a nice diagonal matrix. It's got these numbers. I'm allowing the numbers to be zero here. So some of these lambdas could be zero. But the important thing is that everywhere off the diagonal, the matrix is all zeros. It's free on the diagonal, but it's very tightly constrained off the diagonal. All zeros except on the diagonal. And the related concept is if you have a matrix, you can think of a matrix A, if it's n by n, you can think of it as a transformation of n dimension Euclidean space using the standard basis. Standard basis, for both input and output, which means the columns of A are just the outputs of applying this transformation to each of the standard vectors. Then, if we interpret A as such a transformation, as that is, as the matrix of that transformation with the standard basis, then T is diagonalizable if only if A is equal to some matrix, I guess I'll call it H and D. H inverse, where H and D n by n, and D is diagonal, and of course H is invertible, it has a true inverse. This is just the change of basis formula here. The columns of H are like this. Columns of H are basis for Rn. Because H is square, if these columns weren't a basis for Rn, the matrix wouldn't have the right rank and it wouldn't be invertible. So, so these vectors are basis for Rn, and D is matrix of T with respect to input and output basis V1 through Vn. So on the one hand, you have this kind of thing. You say, okay, in some basis, it's just a sine scale change, or as we'll generalize today, a complex scale change. In matrix terminology, it just looks like this. You find some invertible square matrix, all invertible matrices are square, so I guess that's redundant. So you find some invertible matrix such that you can write your matrix as a diagonal matrix multiplied by that invertible matrix on the left and its inverse on the right. So the question is, okay, this is really nice when it happens because then you can think of your linear transformation as being very simple in some sense. So I'm going to generalize the spectral theorem slightly from last time. We'll get to full generality today when we do the complex version. Okay. So last time we were focused on invertible matrices, but if you allow these eigenvalues here, the lambdas, to be zero possibly, then you don't even need invertibility. So if A is equal to its own transpose, so the first row is the first column, they look the same as you read the sequence of numbers off, same for the second row is the second column, and so on. If it's its own transpose, then well, let's say what the size is, right? So if it's symmetric, right, it equals its own transpose, and let's say that forces it to be squared, I have to say, you know, how tall is it? So let's say it has n rows. Then, even if you don't assume invertibility, you can still conclude that A has an orthonormal basis of eigenvectors V1 through Vn and eigenvalues all real, right? Also, some of the eigenvalues may repeat. So you may have two eigenvectors that have the same eigenvalue. Nonetheless, this is a nice spectral theorem. It's a little bit stronger than the version I gave you last time. You don't need to assume that all the eigenvalues are different. As long as you have a symmetric matrix, even if it's not invertible, which would give you some zero eigenvalues, and even if some of the eigenvalues repeat, you can still get a full basis of eigenvectors, and it can be orthonormal. And all the eigenvalues will be real. So if you have a symmetric matrix, things are good, even nicer than I let on last time. And here's a kind of trivial example. Okay. Think of just twice the identity matrix. So what does this matrix do? It doubles. Instead of twice the identity, let me give you one more, okay? Here. What does this do as a transformation of 3D space? It doubles the scale on the x-axis, doubles the scale on the y-axis, and collapses all the z-coordinates to zero. So the eigenvectors are actually just, you can pick them to be the standard basis. It's great. Okay. But some of these eigenvectors have the same eigenvalue, right? You double the scale on the x-axis, you double the scale on the y-axis. So e1 gets sent to 2e1, e2 gets sent to 2e2. e3 gets sent to 0. And the standard basis, of course, is orthonormal. And this matrix is symmetric. Any symmetric matrix, you can find this. So this is very nice. And of course, the easiest way to do all this is have your calculator find a basis of eigenvectors for you and the eigenvalues. These modern calculators, they'll even automatically try to make it orthonormal if that's possible. If your matrix is not symmetric, it might have a basis of eigenvectors, but it might not be. There might not be an orthonormal basis. So. Here's another case where you can diagonalize. You just can't do it with an orthonormal basis. So let's say we have eigenvectors. Repeats in the eigenvalues. Then you can still diagonalize. Orthonormal, it may not even be an orthogonal basis. But still, if you actually find n eigenvectors and they all have different eigenvalues, then that actually will force them to be linearly independent, and since there's n of them, that'll mean that will span your whole n-dimensional space. So we have kind of two cases, right? So if we're in this case, right, where we have this situation, right? If you're focused on, say, n-dimensional space, you know, Euclidean space, then you're just thinking about the matrix probably more than the... some linear transformation. So on one hand, you have the linear transformation version of diagonalizable, and then you have the pure matrix reformulation of it. Which is just encapsulated in the change of basis formula there. So we know two things here. And for emphasis, since we're about to go into the complex, if A is a real matrix, a matrix of real numbers, right, then this tells us A is diagonalized. Right? That's the spectral theorem. If you find a whole bunch of eigenvectors, namely as many as the dimension of our space, n, that A acts on, and all their eigenvalues are different, then again, A is diagonalizable. The difference is that if our matrix is not symmetric, we may not be able to get an orthonormal basis of eigenvectors. We may just get some basis of eigenvectors. Now, the problem comes in with some matrices are just not diagonalizable. And there's essentially two kinds, rotations and skews. So a very simple rotation, just say 90 degrees counterclockwise in two dimensions, that matrix. It's not symmetric, and in fact, it doesn't have any real eigenvalues at all. Here's a skew matrix, where you add a row to the matrix looks like a, it's diagonal except for one other entry off the diagonal. Actually, it's supposed to be the identity matrix, just one's on the diagonal, and then you can have one off-diagonal entry. If you interpret it as basically adding a copy of one column to another column, a multiple of one column to another column, or a multiple of one row to another row, or a multiple of one basis element to another basis element in terms of the transform. Like this matrix here will transform E1 to E1, but it transforms E2 to E2 plus E1. If I make it a little more interesting, maybe put a 5 there, still a skew matrix. Now it transforms E2 to E2 plus 5 E1. These you can't diagonalize, at least not with real numbers. With rotation matrices, at least, we have a solution to the problem, which is very useful if you're interested in, say, solving a differential equation and the solution involves sines and cosines. The solution is to use the complex numbers.
Taking differential equations right now? Okay. Have you taken it in the past? Okay. Did you learn about eigenvectors and eigenvalues there?
This
week. Okay. Yeah. You don't remember. Okay.
That's fair. I don't remember what was happening 40 years ago. Okay. Right. Okay. Let me show you a little bit about the application here. This is pretty cool. Calculator. So let me make up a matrix.
Okay. Okay. Here's a nice little thing.
And I rigged it to be diagonalizable. However, it does not have an orthonormal or even orthogonal basis of eigenvectors. Okay, so this basis here, right, if you take the dot product, you get 1 times 5 plus 0 times 1, so 5. So these are not perpendicular to each other. Right? So we're not going to get an orthogonal basis here. But it is a basis of eigenvectors. So what are the eigenvalues? Well, I'll show you. So what does this do, right? It's going to be 1 times the first column of A times 0 plus 0 times the second column of A. That's what A times B1 will be, right? So what do we get? We get 2 0, which is twice V1. So that's going to be my first eigenvalue, 2. What about multiplication by 5 1? Okay, so we have 5 times the first column of A plus 1 times the second column of A. Okay, so we get. So on the top row, we'll get 2 times 5 plus 5 times 1, which is 15. On the bottom row, we'll get 0 times 5 plus 3 times 1, which is 3. Which is 3 times the vector 5, 1 that we started with before A transformed it. Okay. So our second eigenvalue is 3. And these are two vectors, and clearly neither one is a multiple of the other. So these must have a two-dimensional span, and we're in two-dimensional space, so we've got a basis. We spanned everything with the minimum possible number of vectors for two-dimensional space, 2. And therefore, if you think about this matrix, the diagonalization equation now would look like this, right? First you have that H matrix, right, for the change of basis. So this is just your eigenvectors as columns. Then you have the diagonal matrix, right? What are we doing? In the V basis, we double the first coordinate axis, V1, and we triple the second coordinate axis, V2. So that's exactly what this 2 does, right? The 2, 0 here does. It represents turning V1 into 2V1 plus 0V2. And the second column represents turning V2 into 0V1 plus 3V2. And to complete the change of basis equation, you need to have the inverse on here of this. This is what converts from this. The inverse of this matrix here, you can think of that as being a coordinate transformation. So not changing the vectors, just changing the coordinate system. So you can think of this as going from standard coordinates to V coordinates. Then this transformation does a scale change in V coordinates. And then think of this transformation here, the leftmost one, the one that occurs last. This one finally takes us back to standard coordinates. And so that's how I made the matrix in my calculator. How did I
rig things to get a nice, set of eigenvectors and eigenvalues? Well, I started with this. And just asked my calculator, okay, what is that?
Now here's, what does this look like with differential equations? What if I had a system of equations, dx dt equals 2x plus 5y, and dy dt, right, so time derivatives of two variables which I'll interpret spatially, equals 3y. This is, it looks like some exponential growth. Y is clearly going to grow exponentially. In fact, I know the solution. It should be a constant times e to the 3t. And it looks like x is going to grow when y is positive. And it's also got this 2x term, so it's going to grow exponentially too. But you want to figure it out.
Well, the trick is to work in the...
First think of it as a vector equation. Think of it as the time derivative of a column vector. And then think of the right side, instead of as a column vector, think of it as our matrix A times column vector XY. All right.
Well, now the idea is to use
the eigenvectors to make life easier, right?
So what you do is you apply, let's say you wanted to work inside the B coordinate basis, okay? So you want to turn turn our matrix A here back into a diagonal matrix, right? So let me call this matrix H, and we have the inverse matrix here, and we have our nice diagonal matrix. We'll call it D in the middle. Okay. So if I took let's say A, and let's say I multiply it on the left by H inverse,
that'll cancel the H.
Multiply it on the right by H to cancel the H inverse. That'll give me D. Okay. Now, another way you can look at it is, instead of trying to cancel everything, you can also just, if you multiply them like this, let's see here, if you only cancel one of them, you would get this. So, look at this one in particular. And so if you have H inverse from now the differential equation, take in H inverse times that time derivative. I guess you can write it like this. You have that. And then what you'll have here, instead of A, you'll have H inverse A XY. Ah, but look. H inverse is the same as the diagonal matrix. Okay. So it'll be equal to the diagonal matrix times H inverse times XY. Okay. Now, a little bit more work. The time derivative here,
you can actually factor it out of the matrix multiplication because the matrix H inverse is just a bunch of numbers. It's constants.
So actually you can write down that the time derivative of H inverse XY is equal to the diagonal matrix. So that's the 2 and the 3 on the diagonal. That's the D times H inverse of X1. And that's how eigenvectors help you with differential equations, because now this becomes easy to solve. Just as I keep talking about doing coordinate changes in the sense of going to another basis, you do a coordinate change here. And some other vectors. How about other letters? How about R and S? So then what's our equation saying? It's saying that the time derivative of R, right, where R is the first component of H inverse of XY, right, the time derivative of R equals what? 2 times the time derivative of R, or sorry, no, just 2 times R plus 0 times S. I'm just reading off the matrix now. Times R plus 0 times S, then 0 times R plus 3 times S. And so this is an easy system of equations to solve. So R of T has to be some constant, so I guess I'll call it C1 times e to the 2t. And S of T has to be some constant C2 times e to the 3t. Because it's just two non-interacting exponential growth equations. The derivative of R is twice R. The only way that can be is if R grows exponentially at that rate. And likewise with S, except now the derivative of S is 3 times S. Okay? Well, now we just have to go back from this. To the coordinate system we care about, right? Use this back to the standard basis. Right? And multiplying by H takes us back to the standard basis coordinate system. Right? We multiply by H inverse here to go from X and Y to R and S. That took us to the eigenvector basis coordinate system. Then we multiply by H to go back from that basis, the V1 and the V2, to the standard basis. Right? And you can think about it. If I have R and S, which are H inverse times X and Y, then multiplying that by an H will cancel the H inverse. And we know what H is, right? You'll notice that through this whole problem, I never actually had to figure out what the inverse was. When I was setting up the problem, picking A, I didn't need to know it or have my calculator find it to get A, but if I had given you A, you wouldn't need to find H inverse to solve this differential equation system, right? All you need to know is H and D, right? You need to know the eigenvectors and their eigenvalues. Because we just need to multiply by H here. And, okay, so let's do that. So you're going to have... you're going to have 1 times R and 5 times S. Right? And then you're going to have Y is just going to be a
0 times r, 1 times s at time t. So we're going to get the y is just going to be the same as s. So we'll have some constant times e to the 3t. And what is x? Well, we have to take c1 times e to the 2t plus 5 times c2 times e to the 3t. And in differential equations class, you would know that to find c1 and c2, you need some initial conditions, say, like what is the value of x at time 0 and what is the value of y at time 0. And then you could solve for what c1 and c2 should be. Then you might need to know H inverse to do that. But if you just want the general solution, there it is. Didn't need to do any inverses. I just needed to get a nice basis of eigenvectors. So this is really powerful. Now, problem comes up. If you try and use this powerful technique where there isn't a basis of eigenvectors, like this one, there's no real eigenvalues at all. And there shouldn't be. Because if you look at the differential equation for this, it does not represent exponential growth or exponential decay or any combination thereof. It represents oscillation. In fact, it actually represents x and y going around a circle forever. When you look at it parametrically, the solutions are sines and cosines of angular frequency 1. And complex numbers can do the marvelous transformation of turning exponentials into sines and cosines. So that's the trick. And complex exponentials also give us the marvelous, not complex exponentials, just complex numbers, give you the marvelous property that every polynomial, except non-zero constant polynomials, every non-trivial polynomial has a root. And the eigenvector, the eigenvalue equation, right? It says determinant of A minus lambda I is 0. It's a polynomial. So if you use complex numbers, you're guaranteed to have at least one eigenvalue. If you want to try this, you may just want to follow the algebra, not worry too much about what it means, and then start to think about what it means. Okay? I have some ways of visualizing what it means to, say, multiply a complex vector by a complex scalar. What does it mean to add two complex vectors? But first, let's just think about what happens if we just play with the algebra. Right? And let's think about it in the differential equations context, too, because that's one of the great applications of it. So we're going to say that the time derivative of some two-dimensional vector of functions, so x of t and y of t, is equal to our matrix, this one, the rotation matrix I could put on the other board. And if you do the multiplication, you get 0 times x minus 1 times y. So that. And in the bottom row, you get 1 times x plus 0 times y. Does anybody see the solution to that? If you remember something of your derivative formulas, you might be able to guess what the solution is. Think of two functions. The derivative of one function.
Sine, cosine?
Yeah. The derivative of cosine is negative sine. The derivative of sine is cosine. So yeah, that's the solution.
Now, slightly more generally, if you put on constant multiples, it'll still be true. Right? The derivative of 5 cosine is negative 5 sine. So you have to have 2 arbitrary constants. And I should say this is the general real solution. I'm about to go complex. So what if you tried to attack this with if you didn't remember your trig stuff, you just wanted to use the linear algebra tool again. Find eigenvalues and eigenvectors. All right, okay. Find eigenvalues. So we need to solve 0 equals the determinant of A minus lambda times the 2x2 identity matrix. Okay. So we need to find the determinant of this matrix. So subtract a lambda off each of the diagonals. Okay. Well, you may remember the AB minus BC formula. This being A, this being B, right? A and B are along the diagonal, and then B and C are these off-diagonal terms from top to bottom. So this is just going to be negative lambda times negative lambda minus negative 1 times 1. The 2x2 determinant formula is easy enough, you should memorize it. Okay? Oh, but we get 0 equals lambda squared plus 1, right? Yeah. Okay. Well, no problem, right? Because we have the complex numbers. Every polynomial that is not a boring one, like a constant polynomial, has a root. Okay, so add negative 1 to both sides. So lambda has to be a square root of negative 1. So it's plus or minus I in the standard notation for complex numbers. I think some electrical engineers use J, but whatever you want to call the square root of negative 1. Okay, fine. All right. Well, then we need to find eigenvectors. So we need a non-zero vector, v1. Let's, in the kernel of A minus lambda 1 times the 2x2 identity matrix, what's lambda 1? Well, we got to pick. So let's say that lambda 1 is positive I. Right? And we need a non-zero vector that's in the kernel of A minus lambda 2 times the 2x2 identity matrix, where lambda 2 is the other eigenvalue, negative I. All
right.
Okay,
so we're just going to use the usual linear algebra techniques, but now we do algebra with the possibility of some complex numbers in there. All right, so let's see what we get. A minus I times the identity matrix. This would be negative I. Right? Because the negative I will get subtracted off of each diagonal. So off diagonal terms are unchanged. Negative I is in there. Okay. Gauss-Jordan elimination now. But now with complex numbers. Okay. So let's say clearly we should make this be the this is going to be our first pivot. Alright? So you could have your calculator do this too if it can handle complex numbers. It could do the Gauss-Jordan elimination, the RREF, no problem.
Okay, so what do I need to do to kill off row 2 here? I need to take, or rather, let's see, add
I times rho 1. Why? Because I times negative I is negative I squared. I squared is negative 1. Negative negative 1 is 1. Maybe not.
That's right, but that's not what I want. I want to add a negative 1 to that 1 there, right?
Okay, so to add a negative 1, I'll add negative I times rho 1, because negative I times negative I will be I squared. The negatives cancel, and I squared is negative 1.
So I'll do it. Okay, so here I'm going to have negative I in row 2 in the second column plus negative I times negative 1. So plus positive I. Okay, so that's another 0.
If you found an
eigenvalue, then when you subtract it off from the diagonal, you had better get a situation like this. You better not get all your columns pivot columns or all your rows echelon rows. If you did, you did something wrong. Because when the determinant is 0 is exactly when the rank is less than the size of the matrix, right? If you have a 2x2 matrix and the determinant is 0,
the rank is less than 2. So you should have at least one
free column, right? At least one non-echelon row.
And that's what we have here, right? This is going to be our pivot. If you want, we can multiply it by I. So that it becomes a true pivot, because I times negative I is 1. Okay, now we're in reduced row echelon form. So if you have your calculator, do the reduced row echelon form of this, it should give you that. Okay. Here's our pivot, and then we have a second column that's free.
Okay, so you just want to read that off, right? Let's see here. So read it as, say, 1 times x1 plus negative I times x2 equals 0, and 0 times x1 plus 0 times x2 equals 0. Yeah. The bottom equation doesn't constrain anything. X1, x2 could be whatever they want if the bottom equation is the only equation. It's the top row of the matrix.
That actually puts a constraint.
So we're in the kernel of this matrix, A minus I times the identity matrix, if and only if we're in the kernel of this other matrix, which we got from Gauss-Jordan elimination,
because the row operations don't change the kernel. And we're in the kernel of that matrix if and only if we satisfy the system of equations.
1 times our first component minus I times our second component has to be 0. And the other equation just says 0 equals 0, which is always true.
So what do we have? Well, you can let x2 be anything you want, right? That's the free column. So you think of x2 as a free variable. Okay, so it's x1 that's constrained. Okay, so x1 has to be I times x2. So we only need one eigenvector for this eigenvalue. So what we do is we just pick something simple like 1. We don't want to get a 0 vector, so we don't pick 0. But just pick 1. That usually if you have a choice, pick something like 1. Keep it simple. And then x1 has to be I times x2, so it has to be I. So this is going to be our first eigenvector. It's just going to be I and 1. And then we can check that A times V1 is actually what we want. So I have to do some complex arithmetic here. Right? Okay, so we get 0 times I plus negative 1 times 1, and we get 1 times, and then the second entry we get 1 times I plus 0 times 1. So we get negative 1 in the top and I in the bottom. And then we use complex trickery, right? Factor out an I. I times I is negative 1. So negative 1 comma I is the same as I times I comma 1. So it really is a complex vector that when you apply our matrix to it, you get I times what you started with. So I really is an eigenvalue, and I comma 1 really is an eigenvector for that eigenvalue.
Questions or comments there? Yeah.
I squared is equal to negative 1, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. If you just keep that rule in your head, then all of the algebra magically works out. And we got to do a little more work, right? We need the other eigenvalue. Now there's a trick. If your matrix is real and you want complex eigenvalues, there's a trick. Okay? It's called the complex conjugate. It works like this. For real A and B, put a little bar over A plus BI. The bar just flips the imaginary part and leaves the real part alone. If a matrix is real, right, so I guess there's a little remark. For a complex number z, right, z is real if and only if z is equal to its conjugate. Right? Because what does the conjugate do? It flips the sign of the imaginary part. So if your complex number has any imaginary part at all, its conjugate is something different. But if you have zero imaginary part, the conjugate is the same as the original. Okay? So look at our matrix. Okay. Well, that's a real matrix, right? There's no imaginary numbers in the matrix. Okay. So the conjugate of A is just A. Okay? Well, you can use that because for any complex numbers, the conjugate behaves very nicely. It's what's called a field isomorphism, meaning things like the conjugate of 0 is 0, the conjugate of 1 is 1, and the conjugate of a sum of complex numbers is the sum of the conjugates. Surprisingly, the product of a conjugate is the same as the conjugate of the products. Using I squared equals negative 1 and the distributive property, you can prove that. Basically, this is all the stuff you do when you're doing matrix multiplication. You have to deal with adding and multiplying. So what if we took the conjugate of A times the conjugate of our eigenvector V1 over there, the I1? Yeah. And, well, then, that would be the same as, instead of taking the conjugate separately, first multiply the matrix and the vector, and then take the conjugate, okay, which is going to be I times V1, right? Because we already established that when you multiply A by this vector, you get I times the vector, right? That was the whole point of getting this eigenvalue I, was we could find
a vector with that property.
Okay. And then again, you can. It doesn't matter whether you do the conjugate of the product or the product of the conjugates. Okay. So the conjugate of I is negative I, right? Flip the imaginary part. There's no real part to it. Okay. Okay, so the conjugate of V1 is another eigenvector of A. Well, of A conjugate, so. So look at this. So I guess, let me squeeze it in here. A times the conjugate of V1 is A conjugate times the conjugate of V1, right? So A times the conjugate of V1 is equal to negative I times the conjugate of V1. So that's going to be our other eigenvector. And we can check. Take the conjugate of I, comma 1 here. So flip the imaginary part. So it's going to be negative I, comma 1. And then let's see what we get. Okay, negative I times 0 plus negative 1 times 1. Okay, negative 1. And then 1 times negative I, so negative I plus 0 times 1, so plus 0. So just negative I. And then you can check that if you take what we started with in vector, negative I1, and multiply it by the scalar negative I, where now we let scalars be complex, negative I times negative I, so the negatives cancel, you get I squared, which is negative 1, negative I times 1, here's negative I. Yep. So if your matrix is real, and you find a complex eigenvalue and a complex eigenvector, all you have to do is take the conjugates to get another eigenvalue and eigenvector for free. So that's a very, so that's a nice thing. So we know that now with real matrices, even if they don't have real eigenvalues, they will have complex eigenvalues. And they will come in conjugate pairs. So if you have a 2x2 matrix and you find one complex eigenvalue and an eigenvector for it, and it's not a real eigenvalue, so it actually has an imaginary part, then you get a second eigenvalue and a second eigenvector for free. And so if it's a 2x2 matrix, you only need two. Right? You've got two vectors now, and you've got your basis. Let's see. Okay.
Okay. And so, just let me keep this up here for a moment.
Let's apply this to the differential equation.
Two eigenvalues for and two corresponding eigenvectors. One. Okay. So now we're going to find the general complex solution. Okay. So the real solution will be a special case of it. So we're going to have, put the columns vectors, their eigenvectors, together into a matrix, which lets you do coordinate changes.
And again, we can have, say, a little coordinate change here, right? And like last time, we don't need to know what H inverse is. Right? Abstractly, we know H inverse takes us from the standard coordinates to the eigenvector coordinates. But for us, we're just going to, the point is that in this coordinate system, the equation is much simpler. So we have I'll just also press the T's a bit shorter. And so we have this, which is factoring out the H inverse. Is H inverse times the time derivative of xy, which is H inverse times A times xy, because our differential equation says the time derivative of xy is matrix A times xy. And then the trick here was we have the change of basis formula. So A is HD H inverse. What is D? D is the diagonal matrix with our eigenvalues in it. But this implies that H inverse A is equal to D H inverse. So over here, we just get our nice diagonal matrix. And then, as before, since this right here, the H inverse of xy, that's just RS. So we've got an equation here that just says dr dt is equal to I times R, right? That's from the diagonal matrix. Because we're saying the time derivative of RS is the diagonal matrix times RS. Maybe let's just write that. And then and you can solve this kind of thing, just pretend it's exponential growth. So just say, okay. So R has to be some constant C1, but that constant can be complex now, times e to the it. And S has to be C2 times e to the negative it. No problem. Because we have De Moivre's formula. Maybe you learned this way back in trig class. Any two complex constants, C1, C2 now. And now you need to go back to your original basis, the standard basis. So you just need to have xy is equal to h, right, times our RS solution. Okay. So we're going to have, what's that going to be? So h is going to be, I1 negative I1 times RS. So finally, X is equal to I times R minus I times S. Y is equal to R plus S. 1 plus R plus 1 times R plus 1 times S. Just doing the matrix vector multiplication. And then you read that in terms of this stuff. Okay, so you have
I times R minus S, so you have C1 e to the IT minus C2 e to the negative IT. That's X, and then Y is going to be just C1 e to the IT plus C2 e to the IT. That would be the general complex solution. Now C1 and C2 could be any complex constants. If you want to recover, your real solution, you just need to rig things correctly. So what you do is this. I think this works. Let's see here. I don't think I'm going to be able to get into it. I'm running short on time. Okay. If you pick the complex constants just right, remember each complex constant has a real part and imaginary part. So you can really think of it as you have four real constants to play with there. If you rig them just right, you can recover the sine and cosine waves, because this formula is essentially reversible. Right? Cosine of theta is, well, if you multiply it by 2, say, you get e to the I theta plus e to the I negative, e to the negative I theta. And you can divide both sides by 2 to solve it. And you have 2i times the sine of theta. That is actually the same as e to the I theta minus e to the negative I theta. So using these formulas to kind of work your way backwards, you can, if you want to, you can rig things to make the solution be real. You have to impose some restrictions on C1 and C2. Okay. So, there's a complex version of the spectral theorem. I may just state it next time, because we're not going to use its full generality, although it'll be nice to know, but I'm not going to use its full generality here. I'll give you a homework assignment here. Thank you.
keep the problem similar to what we did here. So this will be homework day 28. Yeah. Well, I gave you all a copy of the schedule, so you should know. Yes, today is Thursday. So this will be due on May 10th, the reading day. I had some other stuff about geometrically visualizing this complex linear algebra stuff, but I'll have to save that for the next time because it's already 4:46. I'll have to come back to that next time. But don't worry about the picture so much, just do the algebra using I squared equals -1. Okay, any questions or comments? Okay. See you all Wednesday. And I'll hand back the homework on Wednesday as well. Thank you.